tum, the existence, asat, not real. Nidhanat, from the dissolution. Parama anava, atomic particles, yea, all of which. Avidyaya, because of less intelligence. Manasa, in the mind. Kalpita, imagined, te, they, yesham, of which. Samuhena, by the aggregate, krita, made. Vishesha, the particles. Evam niruktam shiti shabda vrittam. Asanida nat pranamanavoye. Avidyaya manasa kapitaste. Yesham samuhena krito vishesha. Evam niruktam shiti sabda vittam. Asanidanat paramanavoye. Avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Yesham samuhena krito vishesha. Question? Avidyaya manasa kalpitaste. Visham samuhena krito vishesha. Evam niruktam shiti shabda ruptam. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One may say that varieties arise from the planet Earth itself. However, although the universe may temporarily appear to be the truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The Earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles, but these particles are impermanent. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It is not a fact that the varieties found in this material world simply result from atomic juxtaposition or combination. Purport. Those who follow the atomic theory think that the protons and electrons of atoms combine in such a way as to bring all material existence into being. However, the scientists fail to discover the cause of the atomic existence itself. Under these circumstances, one cannot accept that the atom is the cause of the universe. Such theories are advanced by unintelligent people. According to real intelligence, the real cause of the cosmic manifestation is the Supreme Lord, Janmad Yasha Yataha. He is the original cause of all creation. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pavartate. Krishna is the original cause. Sarvam Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the cause of atoms, the material energy. Bhumir apanalo vayu kam manu buddhar eva cha. Ahankara iti yam me bina prakatir astada. The ultimate cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and only those in ignorance try to find out other causes by posing different theories. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So Maharaj Rahugana is conversing here with Jada Bhart, and these instructions of Jada Bhart turn to the intricate subject matter of the composition of the universe. It's actually interesting that in Prabhupada's purport, he refers to the material scientists and their conception, their atomic theories. But there's actually one of the six systems of Vedic philosophy also is an atomic atom theory. Does anybody know which one it is? Does anyone know? The students in the college must study the six systems of Vedic philosophy. Sankhya is the counting of them, but there's another one that goes into more detail specifically about the atoms. Yes. Yes, Vishishta. Nyaya and Vishishta are two of them. So Nyaya, logic, is one of the six systems of Vedic philosophy, and Vaisheshika is actually the one that focuses on the atomic theory. My dear friend, my godbrother, now departed, Sahotra Swami, put together a book, little pamphlet, The Six Systems of Vedic Philosophy. Very useful book that's approachable. It's not the volume and volumes and volumes of literature that can be there, but it's a concise description of each of these six philosophical systems. And from that, I have a little quote of what he says here about this Vaisheshika system of philosophy. Now, this is propounded by Sage Kanada. You may be familiar with that name, Kanada. Sage Kanada. He's the propounder of this Vaisheshika sutra. And he explains there that the atomic theory, Vaisheshika, does not ignore the moral and spiritual laws that govern the union and separation of atoms. Now compare that to what's described in the purport and what we know about the mechanical laws of the atomic theory. They're all about impersonal forces that hold atoms together or break them apart, and the protons and neutrons, all these things. That's the subject matter of the atomic theory, which Srila Prabhupada's referring to in the purport here. that theory attempts to explain the whole manifestation of this universe. But it misses a very, very basic point, doesn't it? Because if the ultimate cause of this universe are impersonal forces holding together protons and neutrons, then where's the person? I mean, we're all persons here. Are we impersons? Or are we just a bunch of forces being held together by the movement of protons and neutrons? No, we have personality, we have desires, we have needs, we have all these things that people have. We communicate, we love, all these things. How does that have its origin in impersonal circulating of neutrons and protons around the center of an atom? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But that's sort of the nature of conditioned existence anyway. It doesn't make sense. A lot of things don't make sense, as we'll see today. But in the Vaisheshika philosophy, atomic philosophy, the combinations of the atoms are guided by the supreme will of the Lord. That's the difference. And so we do have our own atomic theory, not just that the material scientists have theirs, but it's there in the Vedic literatures as well. But God is there, the person, Bhagavan, Krishna. He's there between every atom, personally controlling everything, personally controlling everything. Now that's probably where this idea of impersonalism comes from, isn't it? Because if we try to conceive a person like ourselves controlling everything, then it's a bit incomprehensible. Well, that's not possible. You know, how can he be so much in control that he's even between every atom and he's controlling the neutrons and protons? You know, that's there must be something else. It can't be a person, because we sort of project our own limited personhood on this idea of detailed control of each and everything. But that's the nature of the Supreme Lord. He is personally controlling everything. And it's interesting because in our Introduction to Ethics course, which I'm teaching here at the college this week, we're talking about the laws of nature. It's a natural law theory of ethics. Basically, it states that you can look at material nature and you can derive certain truths from what you see in nature about what's good and or bad, or what's right and wrong, by observing nature. Of course, the whole purpose of our studying that is to also take it apart and examine it in different ways and see how it may or may not be true. But that's one way that philosophers, both those who are religiously based as well as those who are not religiously based, view the world. Who knows the most famous example of a religiously based view of natural law? Anybody? Besides the students in the class. Well, it's the Catholic Church, isn't it? Catholic Church, St. Thomas Aquinas, he propounded, he's the philosopher that grounds everything in the Catholic religion in the philosophy. And he propounds this idea of a natural law theory, that you can actually look at nature and derive lessons about what's good or bad or right or wrong. So, and he ties it naturally to ultimately being the will of the God, will of God. So it's a theistic thing. So they have a theistic view of natural law, and of course there's a materialistic view of natural law as well that doesn't include God. So we're studying that, and I thought it was interesting that, particularly that Sahotra Swami says in his book here that that Vaisheshika philosophy does not ignore the moral and spiritual laws. So we're talking about morality and ethics in our class, And so there it is, the morals is mentioned there. So that's our thematic class, Manohar. You wanted a thematic class on what we're doing in the college this week. You know, of course, one thing is very clear from studying material nature. There's one thing that's very, very clear, and that is that we are dependent beings. We're dependent beings. Anybody that looks at nature can take that lesson quite easily. In so many ways. And if the sun doesn't come up, we can't see. Our bodies become pale, unnourished. If we don't eat the produce of the earth, we can't sustain our life. Practically in every way we turn, we can get lessons that we are a dependent living beings. We're defenseless. If you had to think, who is the most defenseless person? Who's the most defenseless person that we see in this world? A newborn infant. A newborn infant comes into this world and is so defenseless, so dependent upon the help of others, that if he or she is neglected for a matter of hours, maybe in a matter of minutes, they'll die. They'll die. Now, if you think that over the course of time, as you grow up, you become any more independent, then I'm sorry to tell you, you're sadly mistaken. We are all as dependent as that newborn baby at every stage of our existence. That's our nature. That's how dependent we are. That's how dependent we are as beings. Now, people may think that that's a bad thing. I mean, who wants to be dependent? We want to be independent. Ask any teenager, at least an American teenager. You know, they want to be independent. They don't want anybody to tell them what to do, right? So, we're dependent. People think that that's a bad thing, but actually it's a good thing. It's actually a very good thing. And it's a good thing because of who we are dependent on. We're not dependent on just material things or material circumstances. We are dependent upon a person. That person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. And he's a very, very reliable master. He's a very reliable master. Such a reliable master that we think, in our unfortunate conditioned existence, we think that things happen automatically or that we're independent of him. Things happen. The sun comes up every day. The vegetables come out of the ground when we plant them. One thing follows another. The seasons follow another. Everything is, we see order and regulation. And therefore we think that, well, it must be happening automatically. It must be happening, but no, it's not happening automatically, just like those atoms aren't being held together automatically. It's happening by the will, the determination of the Supreme Lord. Of course, I don't want to add effort to that list. Will, determination, and effort, because it's not like it's an effort. The Supreme Lord's a different kind of person than us. We have to make an effort. He doesn't have to make an effort. It automatically happens. But yet, it is still dependent upon his will. It's not independent of his will. This is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So it's a good thing that we're dependent. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because we have a very, very reliable master. Now, you might ask that, well, if as is described in the Upanishads, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Ekobhavanam Yovadidati Kaman, if it's described there that we're eternal, the Supreme Lord's eternal, and the relationship between the eternal living being and the eternal supreme living being is that the supreme living being provides, maintains all the many others. If we were to understand that, and we understand more specifically from what Srila Prabhupada gave us in the Isha Upanishad, that there's a supreme being and he's yielding all desires since time immemorial, we might conclude that, well, if that's a fact, what kind of person is this that does this without any kind of reciprocation from us? How do we reciprocate with the Lord? Of course, devotees reciprocate with the Lord. That's a different thing. But we're talking in general about the conditioned living entities in this world. How do they reciprocate with the Lord? They don't. Basically, there's no reciprocation. Maybe a little asking, not reciprocation. God, give us our daily bread. Not that, you know, well, what can I do for you in response to how you're already giving me my daily bread? So how is it that, what kind of person responds so fully and completely that we think life is going on automatically? That we think life is going on automatically when there is the will of the Supreme Lord behind it? What kind of person is that? Does anybody want to venture a guess what kind of person that is? Merciful, yes. Other adjectives, that's a good adjective. Merciful, anything else? Compassionate, yeah. We're kind of dancing around the main thing here. He's loving. Merciful, compassionate. It adds up to being loving. That's actually the nature of love, isn't it? The nature of love is it doesn't make sense. I told you a lot of things wouldn't make sense in the class today. But I hope some of it makes sense. But love, the love of the Supreme Lord, kind of doesn't make sense. And it kind of doesn't make sense for a couple of reasons. One is, like we're talking about, we don't reciprocate. It's not love that's based on reciprocation. In this material world, if there's no reciprocation, there's no love. If there's no reciprocation, there's no love. So it's kind of strange in that way. And another interesting thing about the Supreme Lord is that he's Atmaram. He's completely self-satisfied. So it's not like he has to reciprocate or he's looking for something or he needs something. His Holiness Gorgovinda Swami Maharaj used to talk about the greed of the Lord. The greed of the Lord. What did he mean by that, greed of the Lord? Well, if we consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, self-satisfied, he doesn't need anything. He doesn't act out of a motive for need. Self-satisfied completely. So why then does he reciprocate with and provide for and care for in a very personal way for all of our needs and desires? Because he's greedy. He's greedy for the love of each and every one of his parts and parcels. He's greedy for that love. That's his nature. So that's the only way we can make sense of how he provides for all of us so wonderfully. And ultimately, that love is what we are actually dependent upon. We're not dependent upon the sunlight providing us heat and warmth. Otherwise, why would we all be here in Belgium? We're not dependent upon the produce that comes from the earth. We're dependent upon the love of the Supreme Lord. That's when we say we are dependent beings, that's what we mean. We're dependent on that and that alone. And the example is the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan gave up everything. They gave up eating, sleeping, what to speak of mating and defending. They gave all of that up and were engaged 24 hours every day in reciprocating the love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's proof. Proof that ultimately we are simply dependent upon the love of the Supreme Lord. So knowing that, your life has to change. That's one of the questions we ask our students in the class. We present a situation to them, some horrible situation that goes on in this world. This year we talked about very cruel and demonic methods by which animals are slaughtered. And I pose the question to them, well, how are you going to live your life after hearing something like this? When you hear something like that that's so horrible, there should be a feeling in any decent person that I have to do something about this. This is so wrong. I can't just allow it to go on. And there are many, many circumstances like that we find in this material world. But in a spiritual context, the same is true. When we hear about the unlimited, unbounded, free love that the Supreme Lord is offering to us, even though we don't know it, then we have to do something about it. We have to take up some kind of a change in our life. We have to begin to reciprocate with the Lord ourselves. And so, we as devotees of Lord Krishna, we've already made that determination that yes, I will recognize the love the Supreme Lord is giving me and I will work to reciprocate that love. Each and every one of us here has made that commitment in our lives. Some more than others. There's only one sannyasi sitting here. Obviously, he's made that commitment more than the rest of us. But we all can make it grow in our lives, and that's what our lives are meant to do. To grow that sense of love and reciprocation with the Supreme Lord. And this is something that's done, again, in a very, very personal way. It's not that Krishna doesn't have time for us. He just has time for the devotees in general and the mass of devotees. And I'm just one of the mass of the devotees. And, you know, it's never, you know, me and Krishna. It's always Krishna and the multitude of his devotees. No. It's very, very personal. Krishna has a very, very personal relationship with each and every one of us. And I want to endeavor to prove that to each and every one of you today, how that relationship exists. All of us feel a certain attraction to the Lord's service in some way or another. I have a friend in Brussels. When I came on last weekend, I stayed with him for a couple of days. They are devotees of sorts. They're not living in the temple. They didn't get initiated, but they've been around the Hare Krishna movement for years and years and years, decades. They're friends of our family. Now, the man, his name is Richard, he told me when we were discussing this subject that what he likes to do is to serve prasadam. He likes to serve prasadam to the devotees. That's what he likes to do. He's attracted to that particular service. He likes to serve prasadam. So maybe, you know, some festival or something, you see some person that you don't recognize here and he's serving prasadam, then you go up to him, is your name Richard? Yeah, my name is Richard. How did you know? Because I knew you liked to serve prasadam. He liked to serve prasadam. Now, Krishna attracts us. Actually, he's calling us by these different services we get attracted to. I mean, does anybody want to say what kind of service they're attracted to here? And particularly, I mean, we have a particular... I'll go first. Okay. I like to bead the deity's outfits. You know how the deities are decorated so nice and you have different patterns with the beads and everything like that. Somehow or another, you know, although it's a girl's thing, right? It's a woman's thing, you know. I'm, you know, sitting in class and all the men are saying to me, well, you should be sitting on the other side of the temple room. That's where they do that. But despite all that, I like to bead the Lord's outfits. So I sit there in class every day and I'm beading there. And I find some satisfaction in that. Why? I don't know. I mean, it's just something that I like to do. I like to do for Krishna. But if I think about that a bit, it's actually Krishna calling me as an individual. He's not calling all the men in the temple to do that. He's calling me to do that. And so each and every one of us have that experience. I'd like some of you to share, but if you don't, I can understand. But is there something that particularly attracts you in the service of Krishna? Anybody can say? No one? Yes. Dancing in kirtan. A devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dancing in kirtan. That's very nice. Dancing for Krishna, what could be better? It's a reciprocation with the Lord. Your love for the Lord is shown in dancing for him, and he reciprocates by encouraging you in that regard. Anything else? Yes. Huh? Making prasadam. Yeah, that's very, thank you. Taking prasadam, we all, you know, that's something we can all relate to. So you're making, we're taking, that's very good. We're reciprocating not only with Krishna, but you also by, you know, taking your mercy for doing that. Anything else? Anyway, Tattva Vit Prabhu. You like to appreciate devotees. Thank you very much, Tattva Vit. Being near the deities. Very good. Anything else? Any ladies have anything? Yes. Oh, spraying Tulsi Maharani, taking care of Tulsi. Oh, that is such an auspicious thing. If you read in the Nectar Devotion how it's described, it says simply by seeing, simply by touching, simply by bowing down before, one lives eternally in the Vaikuntha world. So how are you going to get in Vaikuntha if Krishna's not involved? You know, he's reciprocating. If you do that, he's pleased, therefore he gives you entrance. So very nice. It's wonderful. Anyway, I think that you can all appreciate the point here. But, you know, I would encourage you to don't think that these attractions we have for service to Krishna are just some kind of impersonal in some way. They're actually Krishna calling us as an individual in his service. They're encouraging us to follow him, to reciprocate with him. Nothing is impersonal. And if we do this, then Krishna will take care of us. He'll take care of us. I want to share with you an example I had from my own life about how Krishna cares for his devotees. I know this to be a fact. I'm not just speaking philosophy here. I know it to be a fact. And I'm not saying I know it to be a fact because I'm an advanced devotee or something like that. No. I know it to be a fact because I was a tool that Krishna used to satisfy his devotee, to take care of the needs and anxieties that each and every one of us feel. When I was a brahmachari, I was traveling with His Holiness Satrup Das Goswami. And we went to Dallas, Texas. We went to the temple in Dallas, Texas, and I was his servant, and so I was in charge of like taking care of different things for him, in addition to the book distribution that we were doing. And so when he was preparing to take rest at night, I took care of different arrangements and everything. And then I went into another part of the temple where I was going to take rest. And when I laid down, I couldn't go to sleep, actually. I was kind of tossing and turning this way and that way because I was thinking that... Satrup Maharaj needs something. Somehow or another, this thought was in my mind, he needs something. But I already took care of everything. I made everything. I was thinking, but I was disturbed, tossed into it, and couldn't go to sleep. Then finally I thought, well, I should get up and take him a towel. Get up and take him a towel. So, those kind of things that just pushes you. Your mind just, we think it's the mind, but it's actually Krishna, just pushing you. Making you think, you should do this, you should do this, you can't rest, you can't get any peace of mind. I couldn't do that. So finally I got up, okay, I'm getting up. I'll get a towel and I'll take it. So I went over there and took it to him, and he was still up. And he said, thank you. I was concerned, I was worried that I didn't have a towel for the morning. And so I was going back, I thought, wow, Krishna takes care of his devotees. If we have some anxiety, Krishna will arrange our lives in such a way that they get taken care of in a very, very personal way. So if we look at life like this, then our whole existence can be transformed. And we should look at life like this because this is the actual fact. If the atoms don't move without the will of the Supreme Lord being there and being involved, then certainly nothing in our lives is devoid of the direct personal involvement of the Supreme Lord with us. That's a very wonderful thing. And that's what His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada has given to us in our lives as devotees of the Lord. We needn't worry about anything except reciprocating the love of the Supreme Lord. If we do that, then everything will be okay. So these are some thoughts on this verse today. Does anybody have any comments or questions they want to ask? Yes. Well, it's an interesting question about whether the gopis' relationship with Krishna and the reciprocation from Krishna, because at one point in the Krishna's lila with the gopis, he told them that they were so selfless in their surrender to them, to him, that he could not repay them. He could not repay them. He said, "I cannot. You have worshipped me, loved me in such an unconditional way, giving up everything else, that I'm not capable of reciprocating with you." That's how great the reciprocation of the gopis' love for Krishna is. That even he feels himself incapable of reciprocating. But in that circumstance, he did reciprocate. Do you know who knows how he did reciprocate with the gopis? He came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in reciprocation to understand that unconditional love that the gopis had for him and to give that unconditional love to all of us. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he came, in order to try to reciprocate this unconditional love of the gopis. Any other questions or comments? Yes, we will. Yeah. So the question is that sometimes we see that Krishna doesn't reciprocate. And so what's going on there? Well, my student Tulsi Priya yesterday in the class, she was answering that question. Because she was saying, well, maybe your desire is to get in the car and go down the road, but that doesn't happen. Well, maybe that's because something bad was supposed to happen, and therefore he's reciprocating by not reciprocating, so you don't go down the road. Or maybe this is planned, or that is planned to happen to benefit you, and if you do this right now, then that won't happen later. So therefore, that's why it's not happening. So there is reciprocation. We just have to understand, and we can't understand completely, because we're limited, we're conditioned, we're dependent. We can't understand without the Lord's mercy. So we need to proceed faithfully, and then we'll gain understanding that why certain things happen to us in life. And I think we all have that experience, don't we? That we can't understand something happening at a particular time, but then later we understand the benefit of that. Yes. Why doesn't he give us intelligence to understand that at the time? Well, you know, like a parent or a well-wisher in their child. They don't necessarily tell them everything or explain everything to them, but they act for the benefit of the child. And the child gets that benefit, you know, without necessarily having to know everything and explain everything. One thing is that the love and mercy of the Lord is descending. It's not something that we can claim or storm the Bastille. You know, we're not going to be able to do that. You know, with Krishna's love, it has to be descending, and so. Taking a humble attitude like that will help us, you know, to understand. And in time, everything, you will understand in time where it makes a difference. Not that you understand in time and, well, it's no longer relevant. It's no longer relevant to your life. And I have, again, another personal example in this regard with some academic study that I was doing. At one point in time, there was some failure. And that was very painful. I can understand, why is this failure coming? Subsequent to that, even years after that, I could understand how Krishna was protecting me by that failure. I could understand how Krishna was protecting me and continues to protect me to this very day by that failure. And so we can't always understand the plan of the Lord. Even Bhishma, this is what he said, isn't it? The Pandavas, the great devotees of the Lord, they suffered in so many ways. Incomprehensible, ununderstandable. And Bhishma said that it must just be the will of providence, the will of the Supreme Lord, that you have to undergo this kind of suffering. So anything else? Yes, whatever. Either. Yeah, we're expert at cutting the love out, you know. We want to explain it in mechanistic terms, you know. Better that we maintain that kind of an attitude, expecting the mercy of the Lord, and praying for the Lord, and offering our love to Him, awaiting His reciprocation, than get into trying to calculate. This is one of the definitions of being simple, isn't it? If we go to the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about the qualities of a devotee, and one of them is being simple. I think one understanding of that being simple would be to not try to get into like all kinds of complicated understandings of why the Lord's happening, this and that, you know, to not be complicated by such, but be more simple in your approach to life. Is Gopal Hari, is that correct? Oh, very nice. The plan is not to be understood, but to be followed. Beautiful. Thank you very much for that. Wonderful. So anything else? Anyone else? Yes. How do we accept the, how do we understand the sufferings of others? Well, I think it was mentioned compassion. She mentioned compassion. And when we see the suffering of others, we should try to do something to relieve that suffering. That's what compassion means. And so if we're in a situation where we can understand the reciprocation, the love, and the mercy of the Supreme Lord for ourselves, then that puts us in, that should put us in a position where we can understand the sufferings of others. And when we understand the sufferings of others, then we can do something about that. So people are suffering in this world. We should try to relieve their suffering. And that's our plan. That's the plan for us. That's the plan for our understanding or appreciation of someone else's suffering, is that we do something about it to relieve their suffering. Not necessarily to understand, as Gopal Hari has said, you know, details about why they're suffering and, you know, try to think through it in that way, but rather act compassionately. That's the Lord's plan for all of us as his agents in this world, to relieve the sufferings of humanity at large. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I can appreciate what you're saying, that, you know, sometimes it's hard to invest ourselves in these things. And quite honestly, I was speaking with the devotees in Gainesville, Florida. There's a preaching center by the University of Florida there, and I was speaking to them recently, and I asked them one thing very, very sincerely and humbly, if those things are possible for me. I asked them, please don't get into criticism of each other, or Vaishnavas in general. Because once you're contaminated with that, then you don't want to invest yourself. Because who wants to put themselves out there to be cut up? You know, especially because we're talking about investing means investing our heart there. Someone puts their heart out there and somebody starts cutting it up. No one wants to do that. So that criticism that unfortunately is there in the Vaishnava community sometimes, that is what prevents us from giving ourselves. We all gave ourselves in ways in which maybe our parents or other our friends or others thought was crazy. That's what I'm saying. Love doesn't make sense. You know, why, what are you doing? You know, you're giving up your everything, your family, your friends, college, or whatever you were doing, your job, for love of God. Now, come on, you know that's. But we did that. We invested our heart. Unfortunately, sometimes that was an experience that hurt us, and so that's why we don't invest ourselves. Therefore, we should stay away from these kind of things. We should stay away from these kind of things so that we are always ready to invest our heart. Always. When we do that, then Krishna will protect us. So we need to invest our heart, but I understand how it's difficult to do. We all have had experiences how it's difficult to do. But somehow or another, we have to move beyond that. And Krishna will help us. How far is it here? Yes, sir. That's a very good question, and I think that whether rules and regulations according to sadhana bhakti, as you're describing, whether that's impersonal, as compared to maybe raganuga bhakti, which is based more when you start doing it with feelings and rather just for following the rules and regulations. But I wouldn't say that just following the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti is an impersonal experience. Because what are those rules? Well, chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we're chanting the Lord's names. Now, in our neophyte state, as you say, we may not understand or be able to appreciate the wonderful, loving reciprocation that's there in chanting the holy names, the relish that Rupa Goswami experiences when he says he doesn't know how much nectar there is in the two syllables Krishna. We may not be on that level, but we do get some personal reciprocation in our life. And this is explained in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion Srila Prabhupada gave us. The first symptoms, as soon as even the most neophyte devotee takes to Krishna consciousness, takes to sadhana bhakti, following the rules and regulations, he immediately experiences relief from material miseries. So that's a personal experience. The Lord is personally releasing you or saving you from so many of the trials and tribulations which characterize material life. And again, the more we personalize what we do, even in the sadhana bhakti stage, the more we receive the personal reciprocation of the Supreme Lord. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam mam pabhajante tam stitaiva bhajami ham. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. If you remain simply, these are the rules and regulations, I follow them without question, without any emotion, without any feelings, then that's the kind of reciprocation we'll get from Krishna. But if we follow them with, as Prabhupada said, joyfully performed, if we follow this young lady in dance and kirtan, all these things, then we'll start to receive a more personal reciprocation. We'll start to perceive a more personal. Not that it's not there, but we will perceive it, because it is there, even in the most beginning or neophyte stage. If you save someone's life, they'll appreciate that from the time you reached your hand in the water and pulled them out for the rest of their existence. They'll appreciate that personal favor you did for saving their life. And that's what Krishna does for us. He sends his devotees, his representative, the spiritual master. They come and they pull us out of the material ocean. And what did Prahlad Maharaj say about that? Prahlad Maharaj, he said that I could never give up the service of my spiritual master. No, I could not. You know, He saved me. That's something you relive over and over and over again in a very, very personal way. So it's up to us, performing devotional service like that. And the wonderful thing is you get to meet so many wonderful people. That's Krishna's mercy right there, and it's a personal. You join the Hare Krishna movement, all of a sudden, the little boy from Albany, New York, is sitting in, Belgium with people from all over Europe that he would have never had a chance to meet and see if he didn't take Prabhupada's mercy. So, yeah, it's a very, very personal experience that we can have. But it's up to us to perceive it. So, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.